Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Belmont Buzz. I'm your host, the local Belmont Bee, Joanna Juvelis. Today, we're going to be speaking with the chairman and members of the Yes for Belmont campaign. For anyone that is not aware who lives in Belmont, I'm sure you all are, there is an override coming up on the April 6th ballot. Belmont voters have to decide whether or not to vote yes or no on the override question, which is to approve $6.4 million override, which would raise taxes for the average Belmont taxpayer's home assessed at $1.25 million to about $896. Did I get all that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So first I'm going to introduce Nicole Dorn. She is the chairwoman of the Yes for Belmont campaign. Welcome, Nicole. Why don't you tell our viewers a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this campaign as the chair, no less.
Yes, yeah. And well, first, I just want to say thank you so much for having us here and for all you do for local journalism in Belmont. It's really a great asset to have you in this town. So I'm Nicole Dorn. I'm the chair of the Yes for Belmont campaign. As Joanna mentioned, I have lived in Belmont since 2013 and I live in the Burbank area with my husband, Kevin Dorn, and our two children. I have a second grader at the Wellington and a fifth grader at the Chenery. And really, Yes for Belmont, I'll just tell you a little bit about Yes for Belmont. We are a group of committed volunteers. Some new to politics, some this is their first time getting into local politics, some who've lived here for over 20 years, some who are new to Belmont, but we're all really united by our love of the town of Holmes and our desire to come together as a community and make sure we can do everything we can to preserve all that's great about Belmont. For me personally, I got involved because I really do believe the override is needed to preserve so many of the things that I love about living in Belmont, from the library to our school system to, you know, just the people who come and plow our streets every week or every day when it snows. So for me, it's really about making sure we're looking forward to the future of Belmont and can maintain all that we love about living in this town. And I feel so lucky to work with such a great group of volunteers as well.
All right. Well, speaking of volunteers, you have two of your campaign members here. Why don't we start with Adi Batista? Adi, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Adi Batista. I live in the Waverly area with my wife, Rachel Heller, and two kids. One son that's at Butler and one daughter that's in pre-K and will be in Butler next year. I've been in Belmont since 2013. My main reason why I joined the campaign is to echo what Nicole said, is that I really care about this town. This town is such a great, desirable place to be. And the schools are fantastic. The teachers are wonderful. The services from DPW to the police, fire, everybody's been just so friendly in this town. And I want to keep it that way. I want to improve on that. I want to make sure that we maintain that sense of
desires. My apologies. Thank you, Nicole. And speaking of volunteers, we have two volunteers here from the campaign today, and they'll tell our viewers a little bit about themselves. Adi Batista.
Hi, everyone. My name is Addy Batista. I live in the Waverly area with my wife, Rachel Heller, and two kids. One son that's going to Butler in the third grade, and my daughter who's in pre-K who will be in Butler next year. One more thing I want to mention is that I've been in Belmont since 2013, and I moved to Belmont because it was such a desirable place to be, from the schools to the town. I've had friends that lived here and said great things about Belmont. And so from the parks and everything that we have to offer, and I want to keep those facilities and that ability to do that. And so that's why I support their override, to make sure that folks have the services they need, that the schools are properly funded, and that the town staff are appreciated as well.
Thank you, Addy. Nice to have you on the show. And now I'm going to introduce Aaron Pickalingas.
Thanks
Welcome,
so much.
Aaron.
Thank you. So my name is Aaron Pickalingas. I'm volunteering with a campaign, just like Addy, doing what I can. I live right near Chenery with my wife, Laura Burns, and my two kids. My daughter is in sixth grade at Chenery, and my son is in third grade at Wellington. I've lived here with we bought a two-family house with my cousins in 2010 after spending a long time with our two families together thinking about what we wanted in a town and where we wanted to be. And so I think a lot of the things, thinking back to that time, that we had in our criteria list of like the good schools, the nice place to be, like there's trees everywhere, people take care of their yards and their houses and take pride in the place where they live. We want to make sure we can keep all that, just like Gaddy said, just to echo a lot of that stuff. And so the reason I'm involved in the campaign is that I think it's important to preserve that stuff. We need to make sure we provide the resources necessary to do it.
That's great. Okay. So thank you all for coming on the show. And now I'm going to ask Nicole to tell everyone what your campaign has been doing since you became official to educate voters about the override and why they should vote yes.
Yes, well, we have been working, since the override was placed on the ballot to make sure, just as you said, we're educating voters about the override. We know that it's a really tough time for a lot of people and that there's a lot going on in Belmont. And this is a complex issue, and voters really need to be able to make an informed choice. So we want to talk to as many voters as we can, hear from them, hear their questions and concerns, and make sure they have the information they need. Obviously, it's a little bit harder to do during a pandemic, but we're taking a lot of what we would normally do in a campaign virtual. So we have a lot of one-on-one conversations that we're doing with folks. We're doing Zoom information sessions, so people can go on our website, yesforbelmont.org, learn more and sign up for an information session. And then we're basically, making sure that anybody who has a question, they reach out to us. You can reach me at Nicole@yesforbelmont.org. We'll get back to them and really just want to hear from as many people as we can.
Okay, that's really great. I haven't seen you out there with signs yet, but I'm sure eventually we will be seeing a lot of that over by the railroad bridge.
Yes, we will.
Cushing Square, many of those popular spots.
Exactly.
I guess, people wait till it gets a little bit closer. So what is the most important message to communicate to voters? And how are you communicating this message?
Well, I'll start and then I'll
Besides vote yes.
Yeah. I think for us, the biggest message is that really wanting to make sure voters understand, why we need this override and what both the benefit of the override is and what the cost of the override not passing. And so we have a structural deficit in town, even though we have done a lot to raise revenue and cut costs in the past 6 years that has allowed the last override, which was intended to last only 3 years, that allowed us to stretch that for six. The fact is our expenses are increasing at a faster rate than our revenues. And so the mechanism to address that, in addition to doing that structural reform that we are doing and will continue to do, is to pass an override. So if the override passes, we'll be able to support our students coming out of a pandemic, make sure that we have the teachers we need to reduce class sizes at the high school and middle school, just like we have made progress in that at the elementary school, add math coaches to address a lot of the math needs of our students, add a social worker worker at the high school. And these are things that our schools need to be to continue sort of what they're doing, and especially to respond to the pandemic. And then at the town side, it enables us to make progress building the capacity to address like critical maintenance that happens, and not having to defer that, to be able to clean up trash from parks and playgrounds on the weekends. And, you know, really making sure that voters understand that if the override were to fail, you know, those are the kind of things that we would lose. So for our students, there'd be 21 fewer educators when they come back to school. That's less support. You know, when they're going to need more support coming out of a pandemic, we'd have to cut over 40% of our budget for athletics, music, and theater. And really, to me, that's not how we want to respond right now to this time of need. We don't want to be debating, you know, which sports team we're going to have to cut next year. We want to be thinking about how do we give students the support they need. And same goes for seniors. So the override would enable us to add a full-time social worker that the Council of Aging has been asking for years to address issues like social isolation, neglect, and dementia. And really, if we, you know, if it doesn't pass, we won't be able to do that. And on top of that, we'd have to make cuts to the library that might reduce its programming, two fewer workers at DPW, that will aggravate residents. The work will still get done. DPW does a fantastic job, but it will just delay. So we really want to make sure voters understand, here's what we get if we vote yes, and here's actually the cost of voting no. And how we're doing that is, like I said, we will be out there holding signs, but we're also having those Zoom information sessions. We're sending mailings to people, and we're available. People can come and request to talk to any one of us anytime that they want.
As you've been on the campaign trail, what are you finding has been challenging during this time? It's a pandemic. People are frustrated in Belmont. They're frustrated that the taxes just keep going up. They were just raised for the debt exclusion. They just got their property tax bills, and you know, they're seeing the effects of the new Belmont Middle and High School on their property tax bills. And now they're saying, what, again, they're going to raise my taxes? I mean, it's a very difficult time, as you all know. So what are you telling people when they're like, no way, I'm not voting yes? You know, how are you facing that obstacle?
I'm happy to talk about that a little bit. And Addie, please add in when there's more stuff to say. I think people are frustrated for a lot of different reasons right now. I know that as a parent, and just like we just were talking about, sometimes it's frustrating to be at home with your kids all day trying to get your job done. We've been talking about this a lot internally in our campaign with folks that I've been talking to when I've been talking about what we want to do for this vote, is that we need to make sure that their frustrations about what happened in the last 12 years are separated from this vote. This is a vote about the future, not about the last 12 months. Sorry, not 12 years, 12 months, excuse me, for the last 12 months.
It's felt like 12 years.
It felt like 1,000 years. Absolutely. My brain is a little non-sequitur there, but you're right. But I think that what we want to make sure people understand, though this is a very complicated thing to understand all the moving parts, that this is not the town asking for more stuff, right? This is not an exorbitant, crazy thing. This is a normal process. And as Nicole said earlier, that, you know, when costs tend to increase for level services at a rate faster than 2.5%, which is the cap that we can raise taxes by under normal circumstances, we need to check in with the voters and ask for an override. And that's what we're doing here. And so I just want to reiterate, you know, as a member of the Structural Change Impact Group, which is newly formed, we've been reviewing what's happened over the last 10 years in town to cut costs, to find new revenue, to increase efficiency and improve the quality of services we offer. And there's been a lot. We found from a list that we compiled from the various bodies in the last 10 years, the various boards and commissions, run over 200 unique ideas for ways to increase revenue and control costs. 50 of which have already been implemented. Another 30 plus are underway. And that's significant progress. We work really hard and we've done stuff to control our healthcare costs. We've made a lot of different changes that have made significant impacts. But even so, the costs of things like healthcare, compensation, and particularly a historic surge in enrollment in our schools, over 900 students over the last 13 years have been added to the district. We're obligated to pay for those things. We need to make sure we take care of the new students who come and live in Belmont. We have a legal obligation and a moral obligation to educate them. And the same is true. We have an obligation to take care of the people who work for us and do take care of our town, our public service, public safety staff, our DPW staff, all the other people who work in town and our schools. And you know, those costs are rising at a faster rate than 2.5%. And so the reality is that right now is the best time to pay for this if we're going to do it. Because if we wait, we're in addition to $3.45 million of cuts that will have to be made this summer if this doesn't pass, we'll be facing an even bigger override next year.
Adi, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, I just want to say that we have this the new middle and high school that's coming. And you can see how great the town has been with its, being very fiscally aware around that project being on time and on budget. With that school coming in, we want to make sure that we are, starting that on a great footing, not on the footing where we have to cut staff, cut teachers, cut facilities, and cut services in town. I think it's very imperative that we, embrace the investment that we've done in that school, and support the students that are going to be attending that school. So that's one thing I want to make sure that that's very clear.
Thank you.
Just to add to, Sharon, if I may, like, I think, you know, we definitely empathize too with the folks who are on fixed incomes for whom, you know, any increase in property taxes is a burden. And we understand that, and we encourage those individuals to reach out to the town assessor's office. There are programs at the town level and at the state level to help people who are on fixed incomes who can't meet their property tax obligations. But we are also concerned about the disproportionate impact this would have on town residents who are vulnerable or on fixed incomes if the override were to fail. I mean, if you, if sports teams are cut or if music programs are cut and you have to go, those town residents with means can go to the private sector and pay for those things. School of Rock costs $250 a month. Clubs for soccer and hockey cost thousands of dollars a year. If you're in a fixed income, you can't go do that. Your kids are going to be without that. Same goes for, things like Russian School of Math costs $2,000 a year. By providing math coaches to our students, we would enable all of our town residents to really benefit from those kind of programs. And so, to us, we are concerned and really trying to sort of help those on fixed incomes reach out to, learn more about the programs that are available to help folks pay their property taxes. But there would also be a disproportionate income on our most vulnerable residents if this fails. And that also concerns us.
Okay. So what would you say are the top three, let's just say top three critical needs of the town that this override will help fund? That's a hard question, right?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Give me the top three. Top three that would have the greatest impact if it doesn't pass.
Well, I'll give, I think I could give one big one. I guess the top impact, would be the cuts to the staff at schools and the one less potential firefighter and one less police officer. I think that would that'd be quite devastating after coming out of this pandemic and send the wrong message to the hardworking people that have been working in our schools, teaching our students, hardworking people in town, risking risking their lives to work for us, for our behalf. I think that's the wrong message to send. I reiterate what we said before is that those cuts would happen and we would need to then spend more money, which would be put more burden on those that do not have the ability to absorb that as easily as others. I think that's in my mind, one of the top reasons why this has to pass.
Okay. So we need two more.
Two more. That was three.
cuts.
I think just to build on what Adi was saying in terms of the schools, I would say it's really about the class size there. Like if we have 21 fewer educators coming back from a pandemic, or 21 fewer staff, a large portion of those are educators, teachers, we will have larger class sizes. And we have made a lot of progress at the elementary level, middle and high school. We have over 100, I believe there's over 100 classes at Belmont High School right now that have more than the sort of standard for class size. We have some core classes at Belmont High with 35 kids in them. we will not be able to make progress on that if the override fails, and we'll go backwards from the progress we made on class size since 2015. So I think that's,
so class size would be
a big one, and I would say for a second one, and I'll turn to Aaron who can do the third. You know, I do think for me it's just the day to day impact on town services that would be that's what we want to try to preserve with the override. So for example, I know a lot of friends who they've done renovations on their homes and get frustrated by how long it can take to get a permit. That will be longer if the override fails. We have one building inspector right now in town. The override would allow us to fund a second. And if we only have one building inspector, there's only so much that individual can do. It will take longer for renovations and permits to get pulled. And these are just kind of like the day-to-day aggravations of living in town, like no trash pickup on the weekends. We will have two fewer DPW laborers. So we've all seen the trash pile up at Joey's Park. We have to fund things, you know, we have to put money towards those kind of town services. And if the override fails, that won't happen. Potholes will take longer to get filled. So for me, I would bucket the second big impact on just the day-to-day aggravations of living in town that, you know, I think would be really frustrating for a lot of residents if this were to fail.
Sure. All right. I think I have a third one.
Okay.
Mine's a little more abstract. I watched a great presentation by Mr. Asadorian about the new program at the high school that they're developing for a music curriculum, where they take contemporary music and more contemporary instruments and the music that people have in their everyday lives, and that's part of the curriculum now instead of listening to, you know, Baroque and classical music. And I think about that program in the context of a school as like the kind of thing that makes, and I think in Superintendent Finland's words, makes certain kids run to school, right? They may not be into math or science or other things, and that's the kind of thing that makes kids run to school. And that's the type of thing that's at risk. When I talked to Ardo about it, he said, yeah, that's absolutely at risk if the override doesn't pass. And so just to sort of extend that idea across the town and thinking back to 2010, when my cousins and my wife and I were thinking about where we wanted to live, when we have a little bit more than the bare minimum, right, we get to do things that make the town great. So we get to have shade tree programs. We get to have someone making sure our sidewalks are great. We get to have curbs on the sides of our roads and things like that. And those are, I think we should choose making things great, right? I think that that there's a much better chance of us making this and keeping this a great place to be if we vote for the override.
Let's not have a new slogan here, but make Belmont great again.
I mean, that's what I do.
Okay. But again, there are a lot of naysayers or a lot of people who are like, oh, Belmont will get by. Belmont will get by without this override. I mean, I think all the what is the no campaign campaigning, right? Not now. Belmont should wait. And, you know, Belmont will get by. You know, these are scare tactics. I mean, I'm sure you're hearing a lot of that. So what do you say in response to that?
I think the first thing to say is that this is a structural deficit. And what that means is that, that our spend is higher than what we're bringing in. And through the work of, you know, the committees like Aaron and other folks in town, the select board and the town, they've stretched as much as they possibly can, you know, deferred maintenance on several buildings. And it is extremely unfortunate that we're at this state to need to do this during a pandemic, but it has to happen because the costs will be even greater. And the message to all the folks that would be a cut would be, you know, would just be the wrong message to send. And our services to seniors, the social worker that seniors desperately need, that won't be funded. It would not be a great place to be for Belmont if that happened.
You know, Belmont, we have historically done that, and we have sort of kicked the can down the road. And for many, many years, Belmont did not pass overrides, did not want to make the investments needed. And now the result is we have a lot of critical infrastructure needs that need to be addressed. And if we keep delaying that, it just gets more expensive. It's actually more fiscally responsible to make those repairs and do that maintenance on a regular basis than to constantly defer it. It just adds the expense for further next to the next generation that's going to come. And I think the library is a great example of that. I mean, our library is falling apart because we haven't invested in it. And now we're risking where it may have to, if the override fails, it will have to have reduced hours, reduced programs, and we'll be right on the line of losing that Minuteman accreditation. So, you know, I think for people to say, oh, Belmont can get by, it's like there is a point where there are real consequences to continuing to have a strategy of not investing in our town resources and services, not investing in our infrastructure and kicking the can down the road. And I believe, you know, that time is coming. And so we want people to make the fiscally responsible choice, which is to say it's less expensive for taxpayers to do it now. And it will avoid sort of adding expenses down the road. And, you know, what Addie said is absolutely right. I mean, this is only going to get more expensive if we delay.
If it doesn't pass, let's just say the override doesn't pass, how do you think it will affect Belmont's future? Do you think maybe people will not move to Belmont anymore? Oh, we don't want to go to that town. Real estate value, you know, what would you say would be the negative impacts on the town and its future if this override at this time doesn't pass?
Well, I think in the near future, what we know is that we'll probably need to take another, we'll have to have another override measure on the ballot next year. And in addition to the cuts that we'll have to make this summer, as I discussed earlier, I think $3.45 million of cuts that start this summer, we'll have probably up to an $11 million override next year. It'll be even bigger. That's in part because we will have to use some of our free cash to offset the budget deficit that we'll face this year. I don't know if, as you know, unlike individuals and businesses and states and federal governments, town governments in Massachusetts are not allowed to run a deficit. So we can't take out a loan to for our operating budget. We have to have the money for it, or we have to cut the things that we can't afford. And so I think that in the short term, what we're going to face is a much bigger override next year. In the long term, I think a lot of the things that got us into a little bit of trouble in the past were that, you know, we deferred maintenance on a police station, on the town center, on the DPW, on our schools, on our library, on our pool. And those things didn't magically go away or get cheaper because we didn't address them. What happened is all of a sudden in the last 10 years or so, we've had to find ways to address all of those things as the needs became truly critical. And, you know, we still have outstanding the library with, you know, an HVAC system on the roof that is too heavy for the design of the building that is causing it, as Nicole mentioned, to literally fall apart. So I think we'll face some real challenges in being able to keep the maintenance and stop deferring maintenance. And then it comes down to the real people of the police force, our other public safety officers, sorry, other public safety staff on the fire department, our DPW staff, our town staff, our teachers. That getting by, what that looks like is all of those people going above and beyond what a normal person would agree to do to help us, quote unquote, get by. And I think that we're not taking care of them or the people in town who they serve by just doing the bare minimum. And I think that we can do much better. And as I alluded to earlier, I think we can choose to support the things properly and find that everyone's lives will improve. And then just finally to add, as Nicole mentioned earlier, I think that the people in town, as you asked, they're still going to move here. People are still going to buy and sell property. And the people with means will pay for private services to cover all the things that are no longer provided by the town if we don't pass the override. And the people who will suffer are the people who are on fixed incomes and with more limited means, who will not be able to buy those services.
And can I just add too, Joanna, that, you know, I think there are some people who are talking about the future in terms of the future for our schools, and I think are saying that, like, by voting no on the override, that's going to lead to a different outcome in terms of the response to the schools to the pandemic. And I would just ask for those folks, you know, first to say, like, we recognize their frustration. We all want what's best for our kids. We've all been frustrated a lot over the past year, but really, like, to ask themselves, like, what do they hope their no vote will accomplish in terms of what the future will hold for our schools? This election, this override is not about a referendum on the school committee. There is a school committee election that is for that. And that's how we hold elected officials accountable. What we know about the future of the schools is that if the override fails, we will have fewer resources for our students coming out of a pandemic. And so I just wanted to add that because I think, you know, we first started talking about like, well, what will the future hold? I know that there's a lot of chatter about, you know, the override vote is about, you know, creating a better future for our students in terms of voting no. And I just, you know, fundamentally disagree with that. I think the school committee election is the referendum on the school committee. The override vote is about the future of our town and about how we want to support our students coming out of a pandemic.
Thank you, Nicole. Bobby, I haven't heard from you in a while. So why don't I ask you the next question? You moved to Belmont fairly recently. Well, 2013, that was, I don't know how many years ago. I can't do the math, but
if you count the last 100 years since March, it's a long time.
What drew you to Belmont? Why do you think the enrollment keeps going up? Why are families moving to Belmont and sending their kids to Belmont schools?
So I'll say that, like, we moved to Belmont because we wanted to have our family was expanding, and it wasn't actually necessarily personally for the schools. We wanted to make sure we had a little more space for kids. We had friends that like have told us that Belmont's a great place to be. We visited Belmont. We liked the open space, and we wanted to continue to own a home. So the second part of your question was around why I think people might be moving here is that I think there are probably two main reasons why people will move to a community in general, right? There's others. And one would be that it's affordable. And two would be that it's or within their budget. And two, it would be for the schools. And I think Belmont has such an amazing reputation with their schools. I knew about it when I first moved to the Boston area over 20 years ago about Belmont schools. Looking at it more deeply now, seeing how far away our funding is for our schools compared to like towns, it is amazing what our schools, the administrators and teachers and staff have been able to do for our students. And what the volunteers, the PTA, PTO, and other volunteer organizations that helped out, to make sure that our students get a great education. And we have two Blue Ribbon schools here, and our funding is much lower average-wise than any of our comparable towns. And still, people want to have their kids in the schools because of that. I would also say that the pandemic has, sort of shine a very bright light on the reduced funding of our schools. Just to talk about that point, that our schools, did the best they could, which was pretty amazing with the budget they had. And there was no room for any error. And that pandemic was one big, catastrophic shock to that school, to our schools. And I would say that would it be amazing if we had even close to the average funding, Winchester and other school districts have per pupil, amazing things would happen in our schools. But the towns aren't even asking for that. They're just asking for being so fiscally responsible. They're just asking for, we just need to just do a little bit more just to keep our budget going, keep everything we're doing today and add a few little more things that are very necessary that we've been delaying. That seems like a very sound, decision to make.
Are you finding that people who don't have kids in the schools, the empty nesters, are you finding that they're more of the no side and they're more the people that need to be convinced to vote yes than the people who have kids in the Belmont schools?
I think that maybe anecdotally, maybe some people that feel that way, but I also know that there are people that have put the children through school or the children are about to leave the school and want to fund this.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If the vote doesn't pass, Is it the schools that are going to suffer more? Is it the other town services, or is it equal? How would you describe?
I think it's across the board. I think the schools will definitely suffer. Clearly, the schools will suffer. The consumer of the schools, the students, the children, our children will suffer more, right?
Especially why should I care about the schools as a taxpayer if I don't have kids in schools anymore? I'm just saying. I'm just speaking like a no person.
I would suggest that, there's a couple things. One, you probably care about your property values. And if you are a homeowner, your property values have gone up quite a bit over this the economic run from 2008. And then that's a majority that has been about folks, moving in the schools and people that already existed, that lived here, that grew up here, and moved back home because Belmont is such an amazing place to be. And I think that goes to show that the property hasn't gone up. Now, that doesn't help for affordability. And so there's a whole nother segment around building and meeting the demands of all income types in Belmont. And that might be a conversation for another day. But I would say that if you want to, maintain your investment in your home, the financial investment you've had for 10, 20, 30 years, investing in schools is really a sound choice. A second piece I would say is that there's a perception that seniors may not be on board with this. And I would say that there's some seniors, we talked about it earlier, that may be a fixed income. And so any variable cost extra is going to hurt their budgets. And that I completely agree. I'm not a senior, but my business has been impacted by this. And we're all facing, a tough time. So I get that. And I would say that there's services that seniors specifically will not have coming out of this pandemic. There's a lot of isolation where some seniors, are not able to see their loved ones because of this, and because they're the most vulnerable folks in the pandemic that could get COVID and be seriously hurt by it. And so we want to make sure we fund that social worker to help folks as we're all during and as we're coming out of this. I would say that's pretty paramount to me. I don't know if there's anybody else have anything else to add, but I think that's.
Yeah, I would love to hear from Nicole and Aaron before we wrap up.
Aaron, do you want to go first?
You can go. You look like you have a.
I was just going to say.
See in your eyes.
I was going to say, I think, it is really important also just to remember that the override is about the schools and the town. So about 60%. I think there's a misperception sometimes that the whole town budget goes to the schools. It's actually, 60-40. So about 60% of the budget goes to the schools, 40% to the town. And so, really that's, you can kind of think of the division of the override in that respect, that about 60% of the override would go to the schools, but 40% is for the town. And so as Addie was talking about, there's critical services that we won't be able to provide that all of our town residents rely on. And so, even if you don't have children in school or your children are graduating from schools, this is actually about the whole town. It's about, funding our town clerk's office, funding the library, funding DPW, funding that building inspector, funding police, funding fire, optimizing the use of our buildings. If you care about climate change, we have this brand new high school that's going to be zero net energy. We need to have this override to fund a systems manager that would allow us to actually be able to run that building effectively. As someone was saying to me, the boiler in that building is not your grandfather's boiler. There is a whole room just for the operating system for the high school. We need to be able to take advantage of that. And that ultimately saves costs in the long run. So, this override is about, it's really about the future of our whole town. Certainly a big part of it is schools, the impact on students, but the town also matters. And town hall runs really lean right now. We have not really added any capacity to town hall in the past 10 years. And when you think about the work that those individuals do, they have to deal with all the changes in voting laws and elections and how they run. The mandates and the requirements keep going up, and we have left them, their headcount almost has not changed in 10 years.
Right, well, thank you, Nicole.
Aaron, do you want to add to that?
Why don't you we'll wrap this up with a final comment from you on why people should vote yes on April 6th.
Well, I think we've said a lot of different things that are really valid reasons for voting yes. And as Nicole just reiterated, I think I'll reiterate it again. This is about the future of the whole town. We have a lot of great things going on in our town, and there's a lot of great people who work here and live here and whose kids are being educated here and people who've retired here. And I think that the key thing to remember is that voting yes on this is taking care of all of those people, from students to seniors and everybody in between. This isn't a blank check to the town or to the schools to do whatever they want. This is, every part of this is earmarked for a service that is needed by the town. We're going to use these dollars for real things and real people. And if I know that there are people who have, we've heard people discussing that they're nervous about, you know, trusting the town. And I think if we look in the past, we had an override in 2015 where right away the school did what they said they were going to do and hired teachers. And we actually did more by stretching that override for 6 years instead of the three it was intended to be used for. And I think that that's a testament to the town. It's also a testament that we've only passed four overrides in the 40 years, actually 41 years now, since Proposition 2.5 was enacted in 1980, and only one, 2015, in the lifetime of a high school senior. So I think that we know that the town will make good use of these funds, and the things that they'll use it for are important and meaningful to everybody.
Well said, Aaron. I have to wrap it up, but before I do, I want to mention that there will be a very important event that we hope everybody tunes into. It's on Friday, March 12th at 6 o'clock. It'll be live streaming on Belmont Media. You can watch it on Comcast 8 or Verizon 28. And that is a debate between the Yes for Belmont campaign with Chairwoman Nicole Dorn and the No Override Now campaign with Chairwoman Marie Warner. And it is hosted by myself, the Belmont Buzz host. It's a Belmont Buzz debate. And we have co-moderator Roger Colton, who is the Belmont Journal, one of the Belmont Journal hosts. I handpicked him to be my co-moderator for this because I know that he's like me. We're neutral. We can do this. We're journalists. So I think it'll be a great event. Everybody tunes in, and I want to thank Belmont Media Center for producing that, as well as this show, Belmont Buzz. I thank everybody for tuning in, and I'm going to buzz off for now. And Nicole and Aaron for coming on the show, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.